Let's take a trip down memory lane with Niagara County's Great History Show. Now, here's your host, Norm Palmer.
Thank you very much. Today is Wednesday, November the 11th, 2020. And yes, it is Veterans Day today, so my thoughts and prayers will be with all of the veterans that served for our country. In the guest studio today with me, the Executive Director of the Niagara County History Center, Melissa Dunlap, and her assistant, Anne-Marie Lineberry. Good morning, ladies.
Morning. Good morning.
And a iffy day out there now, but as Hank said, it's going to be better in the afternoon. Anything going on at the History Center yet?
Well, there's a series of programs through a grant that Anne-Marie and Terry Abrams and Dr. Shannon Risk got. So we have been doing these programs on Tuesdays, and they're virtual, and we did have one yesterday with Deborah Holler, but there are some coming up, and Anne-Marie's going to talk about it.
Well, unfortunately, we forgot to bring the schedule with us for the upcoming programs, but we are going to have Dr. Lillian Williams doing a program on the African-American influence and Belleville Lockwood, and I can't remember the title of the program right now, I'm sorry, but that's going to be coming up. Also, Lockport's own Mary Brennan Taylor is going to be speaking. She's going to be speaking on Alice Paul, and that's going to be in December. And so if you would like to know a little bit more about the upcoming programs, please give us a call, 434-7433, and we can get you those, or you can email us at info@niagarahistory.org. Terry Abrams is in the process of putting the Belleville Lockwood exhibit together, and that should be done probably in a couple of weeks, and so that will be open as well.
Okay. Alice Paul was a suffragist, and Mary Brennan Taylor had her collection at the Keenan Center, and it was just a spectacular exhibit there. She had there were videos, and she had the artifacts that she has, and she personally met her. So she is going to do an excellent job in talking about something because it's her kind of singular interest.
Yes, yes.
And anybody that went to see the exhibit, I'm sure, would like to hear what she has to say because it was interesting. We were lucky that when we went to see the exhibit, she just happened to stop in. And then she walked around with us and explained a lot of things, and that made it really interesting.
Okay, so I understand that today we are going to honor our veterans and have a Veterans Day special today. This is the first time, I think, in years that we have fallen right on the Wednesday. And both Becky and myself, veterans, so let's start it out. Go ahead, ladies.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to give people a little bit of background about Veterans Day. I think a lot of people know it, but obviously, World War I ended on the 11th day of the 11th month at the 11th hour, and that happened in Stenay, Meuse, France. And originally, that was called Armistice Day because that's when the war actually ended. And so for many years, it was called Armistice Day, and we'll talk a little bit about how it changed later to Veterans Day. The official Armistice Day happened a year later in November of 1919 when President Woodrow Wilson proclaimed November 11th as the first Armistice Day. And he wrote, "To us in America, the reflections of Armistice Day will be filled with solemn pride in the heroism of those who died in the country's service, with gratitude for the victory, both because of the thing from which it has freed us and because of the opportunity it has given America to show her sympathy with peace and justice in the councils of the nations." And so it remained Armistice Day until June 1st of 1954, which is when President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed legislation changing it from Armistice Day to Veterans Day. So the first year that it was actually Veterans Day, called Veterans Day, was in 1954. And then in 1971, Veterans Day was changed to the last Monday in October, again, to give that holiday of people a three-day weekend. So they changed it to the last Monday in October. But people were very upset about this. And so in 1978, it was changed to its original November 11th day again, and it's been that way since. So, now, Niagara County, of course, has had veterans from every war since the American Revolution. A lot of the earliest settlers that came into this area were actually Revolutionary War veterans. And then, of course, the War of 1812, much of the action occurred right in this area. And so there were a lot of veterans from that war as well. But it isn't really until the Civil War that we start to get a lot of stories about personal valor of people from Niagara County. And a number of years ago, the Niagara County Historian's Office started a project in which they honored a Civil War veteran from Niagara County. His name was Michael Husky. Unfortunately, he actually died during the Civil War, so I suppose he wouldn't be considered a veteran. But he did win the Medal of Honor. And there were a number of men from the Civil War era from Niagara County who actually did receive the Medal of Honor, who did not actually die in the Civil War, but did live for many years after that. And I'm just going to highlight some of those people. As I mentioned, Michael Husky, he was born in Ireland in 1841, but he came here to Lockport as a young boy, and he joined the U.S. Navy as a fireman. Now, not as a fireman that we think of today. A fireman at that time was someone who shoveled coal into the boilers on a steamship. So that's what he did, and he was on the USS, and I hope I don't say this incorrectly, Carolandolet in the Mississippi River. And in March of 1863, he was carrying out his duties gallantly. He had volunteered to aid in the rescue of the tug Ivy, which was under fire by the enemy, which would be the Confederates, and set forth general meritorious conduct during this hazardous mission. He was actually issued the Medal of Honor in April of 1864, so about a year later, but he never received it because he died of disease in Memphis 6 months later, and he was buried in an unmarked grave. And in 2009, the Niagara County Historian's Office began efforts to award the medal to him posthumously, and they wanted to have it exhibited in the county building. Their request was denied, but in September of 2013, they did succeed in placing a cenotaph, which is a memorial in honor of him at, near his parents' grave in St. Patrick's Cemetery in Lockport. And they've also compiled a list of the other Medal of Honor winners from Niagara County, and they were gracious enough to share it with us. And so I'm going to just briefly name the people and a little bit about what they did to receive the award. Henry Bickford was actually born in Michigan, but then he later moved to Heartland, and he was a corporal in the 8th New York Cavalry during the Civil War. And on March 2nd, 1865, in Waynesboro, Virginia, he captured a flag. He recaptured a Union flag that had been captured by the Confederates, and he was issued his Medal of Honor 3 weeks later. Andrew Bringle was born in Buffalo, but he later moved to Niagara County, and he was Corporal Company F, 10th New York Cavalry in the Civil War. And on April 6th, 1865, which was basically just a few days before the war ended, at Sailor's Creek, Virginia, he charged the enemy and assisted Sergeant Norton in capturing a field piece, and he took two prisoners. And he was issued his medal a few months later in July of 1865. Dennis Kirby was born in Niagara County in 1838, but he moved to Missouri later on, and he was a major in the 8th Missouri Infantry in the Civil War, and this was a Union unit, not Confederate. Missouri had both Union and Confederate units. But on May 22nd, 1863, at Vicksburg, he seized the colors when the color bearer was killed, and he bore them himself into the assault. And he was issued his Medal of Honor 30 years later in 1894. James Madison, whose original name was James Congdon, was born in Niagara County, and he was a sergeant in the Company E, 8th New York Cavalry. A lot of these men were in the cavalry, as you can see. And on March 2nd, 1865, he recaptured General Crook's headquarters flag from the Confederates, and he was issued his medal a few weeks later as well. So some of these medals were issued fairly quickly, and then others it took quite a long time. Daniel McFall was born in Niagara County in 1836 and later moved to Michigan. And he was a sergeant in Company E, 17th Michigan Infantry. And on May 12, 1864, at Spotsylvania, Virginia, he captured Colonel Barker, who was the commanding Confederate Brigadier General that charged the Union batteries that day. And on the same day, he rescued Lieutenant George Hammond of his own regiment from the enemy. But again, it was 30 years before he was issued his medal in 1896. And then Alonzo Smith was born in Heartland in 1842, but again, he later moved to Michigan as well. He was in the 7th Michigan Infantry. And on October 27, 1864, at Hatcher's Run, Virginia, he captured the flag of the 26th North Carolina Infantry, CSA, while outside his lines and far from his comrades, and he was issued his medal again a few weeks later in December of 1864. Leroy Williams was from Oswego, but later moved to Niagara County, and he was in the 8th Heavy Artillery, which is what was a regiment that was raised right here in Niagara County. And he was the gentleman, or the soldier, that this was in 1864 at Cold Harbor. He voluntarily exposed himself to the enemy fire, sharpshooters, and he located the body of Colonel Peter A. Porter, who had been killed close to the enemy lines, and under cover of darkness with four companions, he recovered the body and brought it within the Union lines, having approached within just a few feet of the Confederate pickets, but was undetected. And so he was issued, again, it took over 30 years for Lieutenant Williams to receive his medal, which he received in 1898. Now, before we move on, I just want to mention another Niagara County man from the Civil War is someone, he did not receive the Medal of Honor, and you don't really hear too much about him. But because he lived very close to where I live right now, I found this story to be interesting. His name was Madison McCollum, and he was distantly related to the McCollums here in Lockport, but he was actually from the town of Porter. And he and his brother, Melville, enlisted in the Civil War together, and they were both in the New York 8th Heavy Artillery. They were both at Cold Harbor with Colonel Peter Porter in June of 1864. And Madison McCollum was seriously wounded. He was shot through the left shoulder, and the bullet lodged behind his left ear. He laid on the battlefield for 2 days before he was found. He was barely alive. He was taken to a hospital in Virginia. His left arm was amputated near his shoulder. He was later honorably discharged, and he returned home to the town of Porter. And his brother, Melville, actually did survive the battle at Cold Harbor, but he was taken prisoner at a later battle in Reams Station, Virginia. He was sent to Andersonville Prison in Georgia, but then he was later transferred to Salisbury Prison in North Carolina, where he died in March of 1865, about a month before the war ended. Madison came back here, as I said, to Niagara County. He married his deceased brother's fiancée, and he actually bought a farm in the town of Porter. And even though he only had one arm, he was a very successful farmer. He specialized in Jersey cows, and he sold the milk from the cows all over the county. But his biggest customer was the DeVoe School in Niagara Falls. In 1880, the GAR post in Ransomville was named in honor of his brother, Melville McCollum. And so those are two brothers, one of whom did not survive the Civil War, but the other who did, who was wounded, but had a successful life here in Niagara County after the war. Madison McCollum died in 1912, and his farm was actually one of the farms that was taken by the U.S. government when they were building the Lake Ontario Ordnance Works site there during World War II. I don't know if you want to take a break now.
Yeah, why don't we take a break, and Anne-Marie can get her second one. We'll be back in just a moment. You are listening to Niagara County's Great History Show on Veterans Day on 1340 AM, 105.3 FM.
Sub Delicious Drive-In on Route 31 is serving free coffee all winter long. Now carrying homemade pies, apple, pumpkin, pecan, and cakes. And the homemade chili is a cold weather favorite. Salem hot dogs and steak burgers still only 99 cents. They're serving Perry's ice cream and old-fashioned shakes. Sub Delicious Drive-In now has a drive-through window. They're open Tuesday through Sundays, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Visit sub-delicious.com. Call 438-7183.
Store. Important places which makes driving those miles an important job. If you've ever thought about a career that helps keep this community working, learning, and healthy, now's the time. Metro will help you get your commercial driver's license and prepare you for a profession that's solid and rewarding, something you can feel good about. But Metro's not just looking for people to get behind the wheel. Metro is looking for the mechanically inclined, too. Keeping buses and trains safe, clean, and reliable is the responsibility of dedicated technicians, fuelers, and cleaners. With highly competitive wages, pensions, medical benefits, and retirement programs, it's time to visit NFTA.com. There is a new career waiting for you.
Welcome back to Niagara County's Great History Show. Norm Palmer in the control room in our guest studios, Melissa Dunlap and Marie Lindeberry from the Niagara County History Center. And Marie has brought us up to date, or working on up to date, with how Veterans Day came about. And I would suggest, give us a call if you have any tales or your thoughts about the veterans and people that served making this a great country. Okay, Anne-Marie.
Before we move on to World War One, I just wanted to mention that there was a book that was written by Wilbur Dunn a number of years ago called Full Measure of Devotion. And it was a book about the 8th Heavy Artillery in Niagara County. And I don't think the History Center has any copies left in the gift shop.
I don't think so.
But you can get it probably at the library. Also, the History Center, we did recopy the reunion book for the 28th Infantry.
New York State Infantry
yeah. Which was also raised in in Lockport here. So those books, we still have some of those.
Yes, that was W.W. Bush.
Yes.
And then there's the controversy of whether he was the first. There was also another person. One person in Niagara County volunteered first, and the other one appeared first, but they both claimed to be the first volunteer for the Civil War from this area. So it's interesting. Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to go through I don't have as many, thank God, for World War One. I know that was kind of a marathon there. I'm just going to mention a couple of people from World War One, and then Melissa's going to talk a little bit about World War Two. Probably the most well-known World War One veteran from Lockport was Frank Gaffney. And he was born in Buffalo in 1883. He actually came here in Lockport in about 1900. He lived just around the corner here on Niagara Street, and he worked at a paper mill. And in 1917, he enlisted in the U.S. Army. Now, at that point, he was 34 years old, so he wasn't a really young man at that point. He enlisted in the Army at Niagara Falls as a private first class, Company G, 108th Infantry, 27th Division, and he was sent to Ronsoy, France in 1918 on September 29th of that year. This was his citation, Private Gaffney, an automatic rifleman, pushing forward alone after all the other members of his squad had been killed, discovered several Germans placing a heavy machine gun in position. He killed the crew, captured the gun, bombed several dugouts, and after killing four more of the enemy with his pistol, he held the position until reinforcements came up and 80 prisoners were captured. A week later, Gaffney lost his left arm in another engagement in France. He was issued his Medal of Honor December 31st, 1919, so a little more than a year later. After the war, he actually lived in Niagara Falls and again worked in a paper mill, but then he moved back to Lockport, and he died in 1948 at the age of 62. He fell off his porch, and he died from a head injury. And Gaffney Road in Lockport was later named in his honor.
Yeah, he was the second most decorated officer after Sergeant York. So
we have a call coming in, ladies. Thank you very much for your patience. You're on Niagara County's Great History Show. We are talking about Veterans Day today. Go ahead. You are on.
Well, good morning. This is Ruth King. How are you?
Oh, good.
Hi. Good. I didn't want to interrupt the history lesson, which is just amazing. But I just simply wanted to say that I have a veteran. I mean, he's did 37 years. He's from the area and very proud of him. And I just wanted to thank all veterans for their service. But I also wanted to say that if you ever talk to anybody who has served active duty, they will tell you that the families also serve.
Yes.
And I want to thank them, all of those people who made all the sacrifices for what our veterans did for us, and were able to keep the home fires burning, take care of the family, et cetera, till they got home. But I want to thank you so much. It's been great information, and just say happy Veterans Day to all of our wonderful veterans who sacrificed so much.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much for your call. You can join us also, 433-1433. Talk about Veterans Day or the loved ones that you lost or that are still here and served in the service. Okay, go ahead, Anne-Marie.
Another World War I veteran was born. His name was Willis Winter Bradley. He was born in Ransomville in 1884, but as a child, his parents moved to the Dakota Territory, so he didn't live here for very long. But he graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy in 1906, and during World War I, he was a gunnery officer, and he performed extraordinary heroism and devotion to duty while serving on the USS Pittsburgh at a time of an accidental explosion of ammunition on that vessel. On July 23rd, 1917, some saluting cartridge cases were being reloaded in the aft casement, and through an accident, an explosion occurred. Lieutenant Bradley was about to enter the casement, was blown back by the explosion, and rendered momentarily unconscious, but while still dazed, crawled into the casement to extinguish burning materials in dangerous proximity to a considerable amount of powder, thus preventing further explosion. He was later issued the Medal of Honor, and he actually attained the rank of commander and served as governor of Guam for a while. He also served a term in Congress, and he died in 1954, and the Navy named a destroyer ship after him, the USS Bradley, in 1964. And just two quick notes. Here in Lockport, there is a VFW post named after Corporal Leo Dolan. I mispronounced that. And he was killed during World War I as well, on June 24th, 1918. When I was doing some research on Pioneer Hill, I learned that he was also a baseball player, and so was another fellow North Ender, Matthew Lanigan, who was also killed during World War I as well. So both of them were players for the North Enders baseball team, and they were both killed during World War I, and Dolan had the VFW post named for him.
It's the American Legion
American
post.
Yes. American Legion.
That's why we need you, Norm.
Yeah. I felt that any
the phone was going to start
ringing.
The phone
was going to start flying off the hook. It's the B. Leo Dolan post.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to mention, that we know so much about Civil War soldiers and World War I soldiers and World War II soldiers and everything because we have letters and diaries and accounts in our collection. But when you go further on past Vietnam, because the Vietnam people were still writing letters, but when you get to Desert Storm and Afghanistan and a lot of the other engagements afterwards, people are sending all of their messages through email and then they're getting deleted. So it's going to be hard for historians in the future if someone is not a high-ranking officer or didn't do something spectacular to have the same type of history that we've had in the past to tell what just the regular ordinary soldiers were doing. Because in the diaries they tell, you know, that they were playing cards or they were, we have a ham bone that's carved into an artifact, and we have a button that's carved into something. Just the ordinary things soldiers were doing in downtime, or who they were thinking about and things like that. And it's kind of sad to think that this type of history is vanishing. I mean, it's just not going to be there for the future. And, you know, I think about that, and I think it's going to be harder to know what we're doing in the future, because with email, we are deleting so much of our history. And that's just one of the things that bothers me. Okay, so I wanted to talk about Margaret Gill. And Margaret Gill served in World War II. And she was from North Tonawanda. And she received her nursing degree from Sisters of Mercy in Buffalo. And she enlisted in the Army in May of 1941. And was immediately sent for basic combat training and shipped to England. In the middle of the night of June 15th, she was huddled onto a bus and driven to the docks and set sail for France, and they docked at Utah Beach. So it's quite an indoctrination there. The bodies of dead soldiers floated in the water, and the nurses were tied together with a rope and pushed overboard to swim to shore. They set up a field hospital in St. Louis for General Patton's Third Army. Margaret met Patton while stationed there, a man she recalls, in quotes, as gruff and crude. He was clearly the most vulgar man I have ever met, she stated, but he always made sure our hospital was well supplied. At 2 a.m. on Christmas morning, the camp was moved to, oh boy, I kill French. It's Bastogne, Bastogne, and 4 feet of snow under constant enemy fire. They set up the hospital at a bombed-out school. It had only 3 walls and no roof, but it soon became home. For 3 straight weeks, the wounded came continuously. Their bodies had to be thawed before the team could work on them, and their clothes and shoes had become frozen to their bodies. There were 2 wounded that affected Margaret deeply. One was a young soldier with a religious medal that had been frozen to him, what was left of his heart. It was the same type the priest in Buffalo had given her before she left, and she had worn it pinned to her heart. The other was a civilian with gangrene. The fighting continued, and Margaret kept her Colt pistol at her side. They never knew if they were in enemy territory or allied. The fear of capture was greater than fighting when the fighting died down, for it was not as known which side had won. Margaret was pulled for a special assignment when it was over and then allowed R&R in Paris. The leave soon ran out, and she was assigned to the 60th Division stationed outside Dachau concentration camp. They waited until the soldiers could take Dachau, and afterward they would treat the camp victims. In a diary, Margaret described the scene. I think I'll skip that in case there's kids here. Margaret saw 2 more actions before she was sent to Panama to work at a file in a field hospital. Promoted to first lieutenant, she was awarded the Bronze Star for her work in France and 5 battle stars for being part of the storming of Normandy and her work in Dachau. She died in January of 1978. So she had a really horrific experience as a nurse. She was the first woman to get a Bronze Star from New York State, and her daughter is still living in the area. So she is really one of the courageous women that served, and there were a lot of courageous mm-hmm. women that served in all of the engagements. So that was the one I wanted to talk about.
And I would like to say, while you were on this sort of subject, my wife was in Hawaii. She served 10 years in the Navy, and four of them was in Hawaii. And at that time, she was not in combat. But the serving in the service doesn't mean that you have mental scars. I served, and I have one that I'm going to tell when you ladies are done. But now, serving her time, when she went from her barracks to her workplace, she had to walk by the memorial, which is the USS Arizona battleship. And that left such an impression in Becky's mind that she can't come on the air and talk about it anymore. It just breaks her up so bad. Thinking of what happened that night with the sneak attack on Pearl Harbor when she went to work. So I want everybody to understand that when you serve, you don't have to be in a battle to have battle scars on your mind.
Yeah, interesting. Last night, the NCIS show was all on the Arizona. I don't know if people saw it, but it was a really good show in honoring the soldiers that served in Pearl Harbor. It was very sobering.
And the memorial is the actual hall of the Arizona.
Right, yeah. Yes. Well, this one was about mm-hmm. a man that wanted to be buried in the Arizona, which people that served on it, if they could prove it and everything, they are able to be buried down in the hall of the Arizona.
Okay, next.
Okay, well, a couple more from World War II. Bernard Bell was born, he was actually born in West Virginia, but he actually moved to Niagara County later in life. He was in the U.S. Army Company I, 142nd Infantry, and on December 18th, 1944, while he was in France, he led a squad against a schoolhouse led by enemy troops, surprised two guards, took two of them prisoner. And then over the next few days, this wasn't just something he did in one day. This lasted over several days. He repeatedly repaired damaged communication equipment while he was under fire, small arms fire. He climbed to the second floor of the school and directed artillery fire. He adjusted mortar fire on large forces of the enemy. He unhesitantly exposed himself to heavy small arms fire to stand beside a friendly tank and tell its occupants where to rip holes in the wall. He mowed down all hostile troops attempting to cross the openings. And by his intrepidity and bold, aggressive leadership, he enabled his 8-man squad to drive back approximately 150 of the enemy, killing at least 87 and capturing 42. And he was issued his medal in August of 1945. And it was after that that he actually moved to Niagara Falls, and he worked for the Veterans Administration in Niagara Falls. The other World War II veteran that received the Medal of Honor was William Leonard, and this is a more recent story. He was actually born in Lockport in 1913, and he worked as a butcher, and he was drafted into the U.S. Army as a private first class in World War II, and on November 7th, 1944, in Saint-Dié, France, he distinguished himself by acts of gallantry and intrepidity, I'm sure I'm saying that right, above and beyond the call of duty. He led the survivors of his squad in an assault over a hill, which the enemy continuously swept with automatic weapons fire, ignoring bullets which pierced his pack. He killed two snipers, destroyed a machine gun nest, killing its crew, He was stunned by an exploding bazooka shell, but he continued to advance, knocking out a second machine gun nest and capturing a roadblock. After the war, he returned to Lockport. He quietly resumed his job as a butcher, and he later worked for Harrison Radiator. He died in 1985. In 2014, as a part of an effort to re-examine cases of extreme bravery that were denied the Medal of Honor, based on a number of different factors, his case was brought to light again. And he was awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously in 2014.
I know both his daughters.
Yeah.
Okay. I know that we honored Everett Fitchley, who was a pilot during World War II, and he has an amazing story in 2018. And then in 2013, Ed Kolick was honored to the French Legion honor at a special ceremony at the B. Dolan American Legion Park. And it was instituted by this award by Napoleon Bonaparte in 1802 to denote special service to France. But I hate to just pick out a couple people because there are so many veterans from Niagara County and so many that served in World War II. And I am also from a military family. My stepfather was a retired lieutenant colonel. And boy, I'll tell you, he had my four sons marching whenever he took them out. He used to come home and complain. My dad was so strict with everything he did with them. And then my brother is a retired lieutenant general. So I certainly am from a military family. And my brother did serve in Vietnam twice. And there's a lot of Vietnam vets in Niagara County. They had a great exhibit a couple years ago at the Keenan for the Vietnam vets. And that was a war where when people came home, they certainly weren't getting any celebration. So things have changed, which I'm really glad to see, that the attitude towards Vietnam veterans has really changed. And then my brother also served in Desert Storm, and he's mentioned in General Schwarzkopf's book and also in the book by Tom Clancy about Desert Storm. But I just have to laugh because in his references to him, that Schwarzkopf wrote, he has them as Billy Carter. And my brother never let anybody call him Billy. But I guess when General Schwarzkopf does it, it's okay. So I just have to laugh. So there's a lot of veterans, and I don't know if anybody wants to come in or call in and say something. But I certainly appreciated growing up in a military family because I think there's a discipline and a respect that goes with growing up in a military family that you appreciate your whole life.
433-1433. If you have any comments, any questions about our veterans, male and female, give us a call. 433-1433. Melissa Dunlap and Marlee Lenneberry from the Niagara County History Center in the studio with us.
Okay, there's two more Medal of Honor winners before we conclude the program. John Bobo was born in Niagara Falls in 1943 and graduated from Niagara University in 1965. He joined the U.S. Marine Corps with the rank of 2nd Lieutenant, Company I, 3rd Battalion, 9th Marine Regiment, 3rd Marine Division. On March 30th, 1967, in Quang Tri Province, which was in the Republic, which was that time South Vietnam, 2nd Lieutenant Bobo acted with conspicuous gallantry, and there's that word again, intrepidity, now I'm not saying that right, at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty. Company I was established night ambush sites when it was attacked by a reinforced North Vietnamese. Lieutenant Bobo immediately organized a hasty defense. Recovering a rocket launcher, he organized a new launcher team and directed its fire into the enemy machine gun position. When an enemy mortar severed Lieutenant Bobo's right leg below the knee, he refused to be evacuated and insisted upon being placed in a firing position. With a web belt around his leg serving as a tourniquet, and with his leg jammed into the dirt, he remained in his position and delivered devastating fire into the ranks of the enemy. Lieutenant Bobo was mortally wounded while firing his weapon into the main point of the enemy attack, and his tenacious stand enabled the command group to gain a protective position where it repulsed the enemy onslaught. He gallantly gave his life for his country, and he received the Medal of Honor for that. Three Navy ships, several Marine Corps facilities, and the baseball field at Niagara University are named in his honor. The next person to receive the Medal of Honor from Niagara County was Army Staff Sergeant David Bovalia. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right, and I
Belvia.
Belvia. Okay. Received the Medal of Honor for acting on instinct to save the members of his platoon from imminent threat. Staff Sergeant Belvia, ultimately cleared an entire enemy filled house, destroyed four insurgents, and badly wounded a fifth. His bravery, complete disregard for his own safety, and unselfish and courageous actions are in keeping with the finest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself and the United States Army. And he received his medal on June 25th, 2019. So that was just last year. So.
I know Norm had something he wanted to say.
Sure.
Well, it was 11 days from this date today. It will be November the 23rd. And that is the 22nd. November the 22nd. It will be 10 days from today. 1963. There was an event that happened that the aftermath I was part of. I was stationed in Fort Worth, Texas. And I was a number two man on a nuclear weapons loading crew that was loading B-58 bombers. And we had the pleasure and good fortune of President John F. Kennedy landing at our base when he was campaigning and doing his tour of Fort Worth. So we were getting ready. The alert sounded that President Kennedy and his entourage were ready to take off. They have two jets, Air Force One, Air Force Two. Air Force Two takes the entire runway, takes off. Air Force One takes off about a half a runway. So it was lunchtime. We were getting ready to go to lunch. And I was working on my car radio, and one of my buddies came flying over and said, "Norm, get that radio working. Kennedy was shot." And of course, being a wise young punk at that time, I said, "Yeah, cat's got a tail too." He said, "No, Kennedy was shot." And just then, our alarm went off. So we went on red alert. We loaded up every aircraft. And to this day, any time the word president or anything that goes with presidents, I just sort of shriek. It was a pall that came over the base that was unbelievable. Of course, President Kennedy was assassinated at that time. And the ironic part of it was the man that was arrested, Lee Harvey Oswald, and then shot and killed himself. My uncle lived in the area where the shooting took place. And before I got out of the service, I went over to visit my uncle to say goodbye. And I was going back home, and he says, "I got something really weird. You know that guy that killed Kennedy? He practiced in the range behind his house." He says, "I remember seeing that guy get off the bus and go back to the range." But those kind of events, I'm trying to impress upon the people that you did a wonderful job today in honoring all the heroes. But you don't have to be a hero to serve for your country. And you can serve for your country and still get scarred in a way you don't have a physical scar shown.
Right.
That was my story when I was in the service.
Plus, I think that's recognized more now than ever, because I had an uncle who had shell shock, and if a car would backfire or anything, he would get under the table or he would get down behind something. And it's recognized so much more now that we really need sufficient help for soldiers that have a trauma in their lives so that they can have a full life when they're done with their service.
Okay, we have about 3 minutes left, ladies. If you'd like to recap what's coming up at the History Center, that would be great.
Well, we do have our events on our website, which is niagarahistory.org. We also have a Facebook, which is the History Center, is our Facebook. So Anne-Marie has some upcoming programs, and even though we actually forgot to bring the sheet with the dates, you can look them up either on the website or on our Facebook, and then before each event, too, it comes up on Facebook. Also, we have Snapchat.
Yes.
I don't know how to do it.
And now we have a YouTube channel.
Yeah, now I don't know how to do that either, but, but I'll get there.
But so these programs that we're doing in relation to the Belleville Lockwood exhibit, even if you missed them, we are going to be having them on the YouTube channel, so you'll be able to catch them there. But we have, as I said, at least three more lectures coming up in the next, say, 6 weeks between now and the just before Christmas. And so if you'd like to know which lectures are coming up, please call us at 434-7433, or you can email us at info@niagarahistory.org, and we can get that scheduled to you.
And these are virtual programs.
Programs, yes.
So we're doing them through Zoom.
Yes.
So if you've Zoomed with your family, you can Zoom to see what we're doing.
Right.
We have a call coming in. Let's take this one. We'll make it quick. Good morning. You're on Niagara County's Great History Show. You have about a minute. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Reiterate what you said. It's the stuff you don't talk about that really plays on your mind. Mm-hmm. And so for all the veterans out there, you know, if you've got something you need to talk about, call somebody and talk to them about it. Don't let it weigh you down. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your call.
Okay, go ahead, ladies. We have about a minute left. Today was a great day, Veterans Day. The ladies will be back next month, second Wednesday of the month, 10 o'clock in the morning.
Well,
1 minute.
We want to thank Norm Palmer and WLVL for having this program every month for us. I know sometimes they're more exciting than others, but we look forward to it. And
if you have suggestions, let us know, because we struggle. What are we going to talk about this month?
But we do appreciate the opportunity to come
yes.
in and talk with the audience. And Norm does a great job for us, and that the station is so supportive. So thank you.
It is always a pleasure. Norm Palmer saying good morning for Melissa Dunlap and Marie Linneberry from Niagara County's History Center. You have been listening to Niagara County's Great History Show on 1340 AM, 105.3 FM.